17 of Popcorn Prosecco, 30 minutes of nonstop movie talk. This week, we are going to cover Edge of Tomorrow, some Star Wars casting news, and The Fault in Our Stars. I'm Perrin Emeroff, and here are my co-hosts, Christy Puchko and Angie Han.
Hello.
Hi.
All right, Christy, you're up first today. Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, we're going to kick it up with Edge of Tomorrow, which is the new Tom Cruise movie. And in it, he plays a guy called Cage. And Cage is effectively a kind of talking head who works for the military and is like, let me tell you why you need to join the war. And the war is against these aliens they call mimics that seem to do everything we do before we know it, and they're just taking over the world, and it's very scary. And one day he gets called in and told that they want him on the front lines to show the world what this battle is like, and he says no, and they say, you're in the army, you do what we say. And through a crazy circumstance, he does die that first day on the beach, but he gets sent back to the start of that day and has to live through it all again and again and again. And that's what the tagline, live, die, repeat, means. But in the course of this, he starts trying to figure out that this is not like a curse, it's actually a potential advantage that might help him win the war. If he can get the enlist the help of Full Metal bitch Emily Blunt, which they never say that word, that phrase in the movie because it's PG-13, but they show it a lot. Because it's okay to read bitch, but not to say it.
That's crazy.
Popcorn and Prosecco. Full Metal bitch.
Yeah, I think the best way to explain this movie is that it's like a video game where, you know, at first you're not really sure what you're doing, and then your character dies, and then it, like, resets to the beginning of the game, and this time you know what you're doing. And that's basically, like, what Tom Cruise is doing throughout the entire movie.
Yeah, I described it as Groundhog's Day with Alien Invasion. Which is also
The video game element is the big appeal of it to me. I like that when I would go through it, and I could like feel that frustration, you know, when you go back to start, and you got to do all those steps over again, and what if you fuck it up, and you got to go back again, and if you get really far and have to go back, that would really suck. That's why where this movie stopped being fun for me is when we stopped repeating, and it's just like Tom Cruise's character was X amount of loops ahead of us.
I think we need to give a little background first. So the first half of the movie is actually him learning the rules of all this, and you do see him repeating and getting thrown back to start and just being like, huh! And then he has to go through stuff again. And it's funny because it's not based on a video game, but a lot of people are calling this the best video game movie there is because it gives you that experience. But it does it in such a way that it's funny because even though we're repeating things, it doesn't feel repetitive. But at a certain point, what Perry's talking to about is that we get to a point where they quit going back to the start and they just keep showing us certain sections. And for her, that's where the movie lost the allure.
I disagree with Perry. Like, I mean, I get like that the repetition part is fun in the beginning, but I feel like if the whole movie had to keep showing us scenes over and over again, it would drive me nuts. And there are parts where a lot of times it's still pretty clear whether or not it's something that he's already done. And sometimes when it's not clear, it's for a reason. Like, you know, there's like a twist or something. Like there's one scene where him and Emily Blunt are somewhere and he's like acting kind of funny, and then you eventually realize why he's acting that way, like that kind of thing. So I thought that they did a pretty good job of not making it so repetitive that I got bored, but like, you know, establishing that this is something that he's done over and over.
I had no problem with them stopping the repetition thing, because I think they did that really well in the first half of the movie where they'd be repeating and repeating, and then they'd kind of introduce a new idea or a new player to the game so that the repeating never got monotonous and boring. But the problem with it disappearing for me completely is that then that's when the story stopped being engaging. That at that point, I wasn't learning anything new anymore. I was just watching him kind of go through the motions and do what he had to do, and there was just nothing exciting, and I there were no stakes. I wasn't invested in it anymore.
Oh, I don't agree with that at all. I really love this movie. I think it's really exciting. I got to see it a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, not in 3D. I do envy you guys that you got to see it in 3D. But, like, I just thought it was really interesting the way the story keeps changing and evolving, even though it is about repetition. And, like, it's initially about this battle and a battlefield, but then he figures out that it's not really the battle and the battlefield that they need to be concerned with. And I thought all those evolutions and twists were really interesting and engaging. And, like, especially there's a personal element to it where it's not just about him trying to save the world, basically. There's also the relationship between him and Emily Blunt, where for him, he is spending day after day after day with this woman that he at first thinks is intimidating and admittedly impressive because Full Metal bitch. But he starts falling for her, but she only ever knows him for a day. So her side of the relationship is always at this place of, like, what is your deal? And I actually thought that was really fascinating and fun to watch, because typically in an action movie, it's the girl who's all like, "You're so dreamy, James Bond, or Ethan Hunt, or whatever handsome leading white guy is." And in this one, like, Emily Blunt ain't got no time for that. She is saving the world. And so,
I agree and disagree. I did think that was, like, a kind of an interesting dynamic between them, because in his mind, they're, like, best friends because they spend, like, all their time together. And in her mind, he's just, like, this weirdo that she met that morning who,
it's
like,
a
knows a weird amount about her. And, I mean, she understands why, but it's still odd for her, as you could imagine. But the thing I didn't like about that was that the movie insists that they are, like, romantically entangled, and I just didn't understand that at all. Because there's no, to me, their chemistry was so platonic, and it's not really romantic or sexual. So, like, the movie even, like, half-assedly tries to make it into a romantic thing was so.
They sell it well at one point. I think they sell it well in the farmhouse scene, because you can see that it's more one-sided. She's coming to care, but he's the one that's really invested in the relationship. What they do towards the end of the movie is flat-out freaking absurd and ridiculous.
I just think that in my mind, this relationship made more sense as, like, a platonic thing than a romantic or sexual thing.
It didn't read as platonic to me, because, for first off, which you see in the trailer, when she does the I think it's, like, upward-facing dog or whatever, it's that yoga move.
Oh, that she does that, like, 500 times in the movie. Like, everyone kept laughing every time that came back.
But like, when you look at her in that moment, I feel like you totally get why he's into her, and I agree that it's one-sided. I don't think it's platonic. I think he is fascinated. It's like calling Jorah and Dany on Game of Thrones platonic. That shit's not platonic.
No, I just didn't really get the vibe that he, I don't know, to me, I didn't really
read
it as
he was. I feel like every time you see that shot, it reasserts the idea that he wants her. Like, she looks so powerful and cool. And like,
she looks powerful and cool and, like, you know, like, someone that you want to respect and, like, you know, like, lay down your life for, and, like, someone that you want to, like, fight alongside, but not necessarily someone that you want to, like, go on cute little dates with. I don't know.
Well, she's not a cute little date type of girl.
Okay, but, you know, like, it didn't read to me as necessarily romantic or sexual.
Well,
I don't know.
Problem moment with the whole relationship thing is in spoilers to me. Do you want to keep talking about anything
spoilers? I want to say what, like, I'm actually, as you guys know, you can see my name on the trailers. Like, I really thought this movie was fantastic. I think it's spectacular. I think it's surprisingly funny, because I think when we think Tom Cruise, we don't typically think, oh, this will be a funny movie. But he plays it very straight, and it works really well for the really dark comedy that is this movie, where, like in Groundhog's Day, there's, like, a montage where he keeps killing himself, and it's really dark but funny. This is like that, except that every time he screws up, he just gets shot in the face and sent back to one. And it's weird, because I know that sounds terrible, but it's really funny and quickly done. Like, Doug Liman, the director of this, has a very sharp sense of where the humor is in this. And I like that a lot. And I thought the chemistry between the two of them is unconventional, but it really worked for me. And I want to see Emily Blunt be in lots of action movies.
Yeah, I liked her. I liked her in this. I liked the characters, but, like, again, I liked the characters when I was connected to them and when I was learning about the world with them. And when that stopped, I lost my connection to them, and I just stopped caring about everyone and everything. Can we jump into spoilers?
So, let's say, if you don't want to have spoilers for Edge of Tomorrow, I'd say jump ahead. How long do you think we'll talk about this? 5 minutes?
Yeah, let's say 5 minutes.
Okay. So, yeah, if you don't want to know what's going to happen in the last act of Edge of Tomorrow, jump ahead 5 minutes.
Oh, okay. We're going to talk about the ending.
So,
spoiler!
Regardless of my issues with this entire... Actually, first, really quickly, the big problem I had with the romantic thing in this movie is that the big moment towards the tail end, when it's like death all around them and the whole world can crumble if he doesn't get to the Omega in time, they stop to have a really cheesy-looking kiss. That is just freaking stupid.
Yeah, even that kiss didn't read as that sexy to me, which, I don't know. I mean, it kind of seems like the difference between Christy and me is that she bought into this romance from the very beginning, whereas for some reason, for whatever reason, I remained all the way through the end.
It's not so much a romance to me as it is a chemistry, because like I said, it really is like a one-day thing.
I don't know.
Well, they didn't have that kind of chemistry, though.
No.
They were like two heroes fighting alongside
each other. I don't know if we're ever going to effectively resolve this, because I think that this might be a case where it's kind of just subjective in the way that we read it. Christy clearly read it as much more one-sided, you know, albeit one-sided, but she clearly read it as much more romantic and sexual from the beginning.
Well, for me, I feel like the ending, since we're in spoilers, I feel like the ending is like the second part of his adventure is not, like, proving he's heroic, but earning her. Because she's phenomenal.
Yeah, that seems like a stretch to me.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, but
I feel like that's why when you, but the last shot is like, isn't the last shot him looking at her? And it's like, I feel it's like,
who cares, though? Who cares because the ending didn't make sense?
Yeah, like, no, the bigger problem with the ending...
See, I might have appreciated that shot if why he was there made any sense whatsoever.
It is a cheat. I completely allow it's a cheat.
Yeah, I've heard, like, a few people kind of, like, try to, like, bend over backwards trying to make the ending make sense. It doesn't make sense. I mean, basically what happens is, like, you know, he, like, destroys the Omega, and then suddenly it resets the beginning of a movie, a point where we have, like, really no reason to go back to that point.
It resets the same exact timeline every single time. He wakes
up. He keeps waking up here, and then at the very end of the movie, for no reason that they explain, he wakes up here.
Yes, see, but all the stuff that happens to him still takes effect, like, which it didn't.
Well, that's the problem. Is that okay? In the end of the movie, the Omega explodes, and let's say that Tom Cruise's character absorbs it, and he gets the power now to reset anytime he wants, and he can reset to an earlier time if he so pleases.
Maybe that's
If that is the case, nothing that happened in this loop should have taken effect into the new one that he goes into. The alien should have still been there then.
No, it kind of feels like the real reason that we get that ending is not because it makes any logical sense or because, you know, it's like, oh, this is the way the story should end, but because you can't have a big action movie that ends with the characters dying and then that's it. Because then you can't have a franchise, then you get like a, you know, downer of an ending. Like, and it really felt to me like that was the only reason it had to end that way. And that kind of annoyed me.
Another thing
that's really annoying and, like, moronic in this story, Angie, you brought it up the other night, is the fact that Emily Blunt's character, she used to have this ability that Tom Cruise's character now has, but unless she died and never came back to life, how would she know that she lost the ability? There is one point in the movie where he's like, I feel that it's gone, but that is such a cop-out.
It's explained because apparently it's just something you can feel if you have, but it's just
It would have been better if there had been some visual cue or something, like if he had like a mark or if there was something that they could actually visually show you, that would have been stronger. I'll give you that.
Glowed blue or something. Like,
well,
just
then
like a
everybody
little,
would know there's something
like,
weird.
Not like all over the place. I mean, sure. Just, even like the slightest hint, like his eye color changes, anything.
Well, we're running out of spoiler time, so I want to say one thing about the ending. I understand that it's a cheat. I can't explain why it happens in any way that narratively makes sense, but for me it's like Jaws, where I was so on board with the story, even though it didn't make sense that the shark blows up, I don't care. I was excited because I wanted this to blow up.
It wasn't, like, narratively satisfying, but it was, like, emotionally satisfying.
Yes.
And I don't even necessarily agree with that because, I don't know. I mean, I think the difference, again, is just that, like, from the beginning, like, you liked the story a lot more. So when you got to that point, I think you had more invested in these characters being happy, whereas I was just like, well, that didn't make any fucking sense.
I'll give you that.
I mean, so overall, I mean, should we...
I was really into it at the beginning. The second this thing started, I found, like, the way they presented what happened in the world and why we are where we are now really engrossing. I was so into it. I love the whole first act when he's kind of just feeling out this power in his new situation. Yeah. The point that everything kind of, like, did one of those for me is the farmhouse stuff. At that point, it's like I cared less and less and less until they gave me a really stupid ending, and then I realized I didn't care at all.
Okay, so let's just wrap this up with if... Would you recommend people see this movie this weekend?
No.
Yes. Actually, I know that I've been saying mostly things I didn't like about it, but that's just because I haven't had... I guess we, for some reason, the conversation hasn't gone the direction of things that we liked about it, and I actually thought that it was really fun. I don't think it's, like, the greatest action movie of the year or whatever, like some people have been preemptively declaring it, but I think it's, like, a really fun summer movie. Like, Emily Blunt is really badass and, like, awesome in this, and Tom Cruise is very entertaining. Like, I don't think that their chemistry is sexual necessarily, but they have, like, a nice, you know, they have a nice rapport going. Like, I think that people should watch this.
It's not a bad movie. It's just unsatisfying. And for me, unsatisfying ruins everything. Because, like, if you don't walk away excited about it, then, like, what's the point?
But that's the thing. Okay, so from my perspective, I walked away elated by this movie. I thought it was incredibly fun. I thought it was really surprising and original. I thought that it did a lot of funny things I didn't expect. And yes, I would say go in with maybe managed expectations because, yeah, the ending is problematic. I will give you that. But I had a goddamn blast at this movie. I had so much fun.
I mean, like, if I'm being perfectly honest, I think one of the reasons that I liked it a little less, and this is so unfair because it's not the movie's fault, is because it had been hyped up for me so much in advance by, I don't know, certain people on this podcast, for example.
I wonder who.
Right. But just in general, I'd heard a lot of great things.
For the record, I'm not one of the people that said it's the best action movie of the year. I try to be really careful about saying stuff like that in reviews because you don't know what else is going to come out this year. But I stand
by that. That's a nonsense statement anyway to say in June, by the way. Like,
it's ballsy.
You can say that. It doesn't make any sense.
But like for me, like I stand by my review. I thought this movie was really fun and really cool, and it was so much more than I expected. I think part of the reason that we're coming from it from very different places is I went in with no real expectations because I saw it a little earlier than you guys did, and then by the time you guys had seen it, you had already seen all these reviews like mine where we were being like, oh my god! So
right,
I think
you just made the point for me where you were like, it's so much better than I expected. That's because you weren't expecting as much. But I think, yeah, overall I liked it. I think Perry liked it less, and you loved it.
All right.
But, oh, if you're an Emily Blunt fan, you should watch this because she's really great in this. Sorry.
All right, moving on to Star Wars casting. And Angie, you're taking this one.
Right. So I know we're not really breaking news here, but we want to talk about it anyway.
Because it's baller.
It is totally baller. So you know, like,
how excited I am. I just went to like fucking what slang from like what was it, 2003? What am I doing?
Excuse me, Christy.
It's not my section. I'm gonna sit here quietly.
So you know, like a few weeks ago, they announced a bunch of new Star Wars cast members, and we talked about it on this very podcast where it was like an excellent cast, but like weirdly not so diverse in terms of gender, as in there was like literally one new female character. And then after that, you know, like Lucasfilm and Disney were like, oh no, we're adding other ones, like don't worry. And we're like, all right, like call us when that happens, we'll see. And
we'll
then this week, not only did they do it, they added like two actresses, and awesome actresses at that. They added Lupita Nyong'o, you know, from 12 Years a Slave, obviously, and Gwendolyn Christie, aka Brienne of Tarth from Game of Thrones. And I'm so unbelievably excited, and this is, I think the difference is, like, before I was excited about the cast just because I was like, look, those are really solid actors. I want to see those people in anything. But I had a lot of reservations about, like, you know, it felt just so much like, oh, okay, so Star Wars is still a boys' club. This is still, like, you know, for men only. Like, they're not welcoming to women. And, like, you know, even at the time, I would have conceded that since all the casting wasn't in and we didn't know what they were doing, it's not completely fair. But it still kind of just felt like there was something holding me back from being completely excited. Now I feel like much more like, yes, I'm on board with this. I can't think of better casting for it. I mean, we don't actually know who they're playing, but they just both feel like characters that I think will fit in really well with that cast. And
yeah, I keep getting really excited about this, but then I keep looking at this lineup now. Even the people that who were announced before, like, of the bunch, I think one of the most ones that I'm most excited for is Adam Driver. Like, I really like that idea. And now with these two in it as well, I'm really excited for them. So, like, now that I'm all pumped for this, I'm, like, constantly worried, like, oh my god, what if they have, like, 2 seconds in this movie? What if it doesn't live up to my hopes now?
I am a little... I mean, like, obviously, I'm super stoked about this because, one, I think Lupita is just amazing. Like, she knocked it out of the park with 12 Years a Slave, and I'm, like, excited to see her do bigger things, and, like, Star Wars is, like, the biggest thing. That's so exciting. And I, like, want her to have, like, the fiercest costumes and the lightsaber. I want both those things, and if they don't happen, I will be sad.
Yeah, when I talked to you, it basically sounded like you wished Lupita was going to be in, like, the Hunger Games, like, costume-wise.
Yes, no, completely, because, okay... she tears up red carpet fashion like nobody else, and I know that sounds like a really superficial thing, but, like, that's a gift in Hollywood. And, like, that's why I took to Twitter. I completely forgot I had job that day and just started photoshopping, like, Lupita with lightsabers. And, of course, the first thing I did was put a sword in Brienne of Tarth, and people started calling her Brienne of Darth or Brienne of Hoth, which both are brilliant. I'm on board with both these things. And, like, if they don't get fight scenes, I will be heartbroken, but especially Gwendolyn Christie, because we've seen on Game of Thrones, she can do stage combat like a goddamn boss.
One of them is totally a villain. There's no way they're both good.
Which
I'll
is
bet,
nice.
I'll
I
bet
don't
you
care.
Know. No, like, I don't care about that. I kind of want to see it.
And I mean, I'm so excited because they're both really great actresses. They both are people who look different than the typical, like, mold of what you're going to bring a woman. Like, it's not Amber Heard, for God's sakes, which, like, I guess no offense to Amber Heard, but, like, she is in some damn doll movies playing damn doll characters who are just, like, well, pretty blonde girl in distress.
She's got that face, too, you know, like, just, like, a classically pretty blonde blonde hair, nice.
And I'm so glad they didn't do that with the rest of this casting, because, like, I mean, like, we were talking at the time being like, look, it's too soon to say, we don't know who these people are playing, we don't know.
Wait, who's the other girl again?
Daisy Ridley. She's, like, a little brunette that no one knows anything about. She was in Mr. Selfridge.
Is she, like, the classically pretty, you know, typical leading lady?
She's pretty. Yeah, she's cute. She's, like, she looks kind of like a young Carrie Fisher, honestly.
Yeah.
Like, she's brunette, she's pretty, but she's not like...
She's not like Amber Heard. She doesn't look like a model or anything.
Yeah,
like,
she doesn't look like a Bachelor contestant with, like,
she's
giant...
She's very pretty. She's cute.
She's not a busty blonde or something.
And I mean, like, you know, let's be real. Like, Gwendolyn Christie and Lupita Nyong'o are also really pretty. They're just... I think we're just excited that they're not, like, the...
They're not...
Like,
they're not typical.
Yeah,
they're not really cool actresses who are exciting and, like... It's,
and they're good. They're just two talented people who are a blast to watch. Because I was just talking about this with somebody else on Game of Thrones. Like, the more fun people at this point are the people that I'm into their storylines a little more. It's the performances that have kind of gotten a little dull to me. I don't want to start picking on Game of Thrones now. But I love...
Brienne's amazing.
Brienne and what's his name?
Podrick.
Podrick.
Seriously,
I just want a spin-off movie of, like, Brienne and Podrick and their big adventures.
There's a really great video that someone did Brienne and Podrick, like a sitcom, and it's, like, set to this Perfect Strangers theme song. Genius. Look that up. It's amazing.
The other reason that I'm excited about Star Wars casting, going back to that for a second, is that it kind of comes at a really good time for Lupita, because I think after her 12 Years a Slave, when we were all like, well, what's she going to do next? And, like, I remember,
She has a line.
Yeah, like, she's like...
She probably filmed that.
Like,
it probably wasn't in order or something like that.
No, it was totally like, yeah, you get to be in this movie, pretty girl. That'll be fine.
Yeah, and I mean,
they
I think
know
it's
what
just
she
like,
was all about,
she was this actress that everyone was really excited about, but also I think a lot of us were really anxious because we're like, well, you know, she's a great actress, she's super pretty, she wears clothes really well, but let's be real, she's not like a pretty blonde girl.
It's Hollywood.
And like the options tend to be limited for people like that. So I think a lot of people were worried about that, and this makes me feel like so much, to be honest, I feel like a sense of relief that like, okay, good. Like she got like that big, juicy movie that we've been waiting for to get. And like, again, granted, we don't know what she's doing in this movie or in the ones after this. Like maybe it's a small role, we don't know. But it's just great to see her like, you know, land like that big franchise.
And it's smart. It's so smart of them to cast, one, these two actresses, because as we said, they're talented, they're charismatic, they're exciting on screen, but also both of them have really big fandoms. So you're bringing in people who, like, Star Wars is huge, and really Star Wars could cast all unknowns and it would still make tons of money. But they're doing really interesting casting that is trying to pull in people that might not necessarily see a Star Wars movie. Like, the three of us are going to see a Star Wars movie no matter what they do, because that is our job. But this, casting Lupita and Gwendolyn, is the first time I've actually been excited about these movies, because for the simple reason, Star Wars movies at this point don't have to be good to make tons of money.
That's true of a lot of, like, established franchises.
Which is true, yeah.
Sadly.
And it's just like, right now, we don't know anything about the stories, we don't know anything about anything, so I'm not especially excited because there's no promise to me that these movies are going to be interesting. But this cast now has come to a point where, like, okay, I'm interested.
Yeah, I agree, and I also think that it's just, I'm really happy to see them get this big movie because it raises their profile. By the way, this means that Gwendolyn Christie has roles in Game of Thrones, obviously, Star Wars, she also has a role coming up in The Hunger Games, like, it's like the third trifecta,
I'm
like,
so
she's ruling,
that.
Like, she's like the queen of the geeks now.
Gwendolyn Christie is like
the next Sigourney Weaver.
Like, I'm really excited about Lupita and all, but they kind of, like, planted the seed for her to be in here. So when it happened, I'm like, oh, yeah, great. But, like, I knew that. When they said Gwendolyn Christie, I'm like, oh, my God.
Lupita was rumored for a while. I was like, that's not funny. Like, I almost blocked the person that I saw at first because I thought they were messing with me, and I didn't think it was, like, I was like, that's not cool. That's not something you do to people's hearts. And then I, like, looked it up, and I was like, wait, real thing? It's a real thing? I got the email from Disney being like, maybe you should go to StarWars.com, which, like, they're not even sending us press releases. It's literally just go to StarWars.com. And like,
I got that. By the way, for 2 seconds, can we talk about, I guess Josh Trank is also directing a new one of the
And Gareth Edwards.
Yeah, well, I think the Josh Trank one is new.
Yeah, it is newer, yeah.
I don't know, like, I liked his Chronicle, but the one of the things that was fun about Chronicle was that it wasn't your typical big action franchise entry, and now he's done Fantastic Four. And
well,
now
that's the risk we're taking by locking him in for this before seeing anything from Fantastic Four. I mean, they've already shot quite a bit of that, right?
I would imagine. I don't know where they're at on that, actually.
I'm going to assume that the smart move would be to lock him in to direct a Star Wars movie after having seen some footage from Fantastic Four and saying that it's good, because otherwise they could completely be fucking themselves right
also,
now.
Also, I feel like they probably have the option to drop him if they haven't. Yeah.
I guess, but like that'd be a pretty like shitty movie. I mean, look at all this crap that's happening with Ant-Man. No one's excited for that movie anymore. Imagine Fantastic Four comes out, that movie sucks, and they're like, "All right, we're gonna swap directors here."
Well, but also, he doesn't have the kind of following that Edgar Wright has. Because, like, I mean, honestly, Edgar Wright can do no wrong to certain people.
I mean, I think part of the reason there was so much uproar about Edgar Wright leaving Ant-Man is because people weren't necessarily excited for Ant-Man, they were excited for Edgar Wright's Ant-Man.
Yeah,
well, it's
and also
part
that he
part
had
of
developed that. Like, this is not, we're not talking the same thing here.
He's been working on it for so long, he's invested so much time, and, like,
totally,
the fact
but
that
that's not what we're talking about.
The fact
about
that
Josh
he,
Frank.
The fact that he
be a...
leaves, Sorry. Though, like, directly points to, like, studio problems.
Yeah.
And, like, God, if that happens with Josh Trank as well, it'll directly point to creative issues.
But I don't think you can point those two things together because Josh Trank is being brought in as a hired gun. He's not developing the project. He's being brought in to, like, make sense of it. And I think he's an exciting addition. I think Gareth Edwards is an exciting addition. But it's another one of those things with, like, we don't know what the hell spin-off movies mean in this world yet. There's a lot of fun theories.
My hope would be that the spin-off movies don't just feel like the regular Star Wars movies, if that makes sense. Like, I want them to be, like, a little bit more offbeat, a little bit more unexpected. That is my hope. I don't know if that's actually what they're going
to do. I kind of want them to feel like fan fiction. Like, I want them to feel like they operate under their own rules a little bit. You
I
know,
want them
like
to feel, like, smaller scale. Yeah, I think, like, I want them to feel different, but I'm not convinced that they are... You know,
more limited focus. Like, it's not like a million worlds and hopping from one place to the other. Like, let's just focus on a person in a time and a place and let them breathe in that moment. Because, movies of these scale, they don't do that.
In my fantasies, like, they're not even the same genre as, like, a mainstream Star Wars movie. Obviously, that's not gonna happen.
No, I know what you mean, though. But, like, because obviously there'll be tentpoles that are Star Wars movies, but I would like to see, like, we had talked about this before with the idea of, like, what if Marvel, instead of making 80, 100, and $150 million movies, made a $40 million movie that's a small, simple story. Stuff like that, I think, is really interesting. It's something that's not...
I would love to see that. That would be so refreshing.
Sadly, I don't think anyone is making movies in that budget range anymore.
Well, that's what I'm saying, though. That I don't think that's what they'll do with Star Wars, but I'd like to see something like that where they decide to, like,
it seems
make
like,
it smaller.
It seems like that range is wiped out. I feel like it's either, like, 20 million and then jump up to 70 million, but that there's nothing in between.
There's, like, the $3 million Blumhouse movies. There's a couple of $20 million
movies. It's, like, comedies. Those are, like, the comedies with, like, shit, like Tammy and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's what that calls.
Yeah.
Like 22 Jump Street. And then you go to Maleficent.
Yeah.
But anyway, so to wrap up Star Wars, I think across the board we're excited about Lupita and Gwendolyn, and we are tentatively intrigued by Josh Trank. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, I think that's
right. I'm more excited about Gareth Edwards. I think he's going to do it well.
Oh, I think he will, too. I just brought up Josh Trank because I was the one that happened.
That's a newer item. So, yeah, let's move on to our big review, guys.
So
can you explain why it's the big review?
I guess it's the big review because Fault in Our Stars is currently on track to beat Edge of Tomorrow at the domestic box office this weekend, and by quite a bit, too. I think some people – I predicted it's going to make $40 million compared to Edge of Tomorrow's $30 million, but there's other that's saying it's going to hit $45 million, which is pretty freaking big for a YA drama about kids with cancer. That's kind of incredible.
No fantastical elements, no special effects.
Just like pure, like, romance, drama, heart. It's kind of nice.
I can't say I'm honestly that shocked. Like, that book had such a huge following even before.
John Green is a huge following.
John Green is a
showman. He's just like
I thought
a
you were
fun
saying shaman
to follow. Showman. Like, if you ever watched his YouTube channel, he's just really engaging and funny and
likable. He is.
And I could really sit on his YouTube channel and, like, just watch him talk about nonsense all day. All right, anyway, so Fault in Our Stars is a book-to-film adaptation of John Green's book, Fault in Our Stars, stars Shailene Woodley as Hazel, who is a teenager and when she's young, she's diagnosed with stage 4 thyroid cancer, and over the years, it's made its way into her lungs, and now she walks around with, what is that, like an oxygen tank, wheeling it around so she can, it can help her breathe. And she considers herself a grenade because it's basically incurable. She's taking a drug that kind of keeps it at bay, but she'll never be 100% well. So she thinks that, you know, one day she's going to explode and take everybody close to her down with her. And her mom is always trying to get her to go to support group to make friends. And one day, she's always against it, but one day she goes to a support group and she meets this guy, Augustus Waters, and he falls for her instantly. And he's super confident and also super persistent, and he will not let her push him away for anything, and she caves, and they have a really sweet romance within the context of this whole terrible kid cancer world, and it's very effective. It's the best part of this movie to me was that it's what you would expect in terms of it being a total sob fest, and you need to bring boxes and boxes of tissues with you, but also the first half of the movie is really almost like a normal kind of coming of age fun situation. It's Hazel, Gus, and their other friend who has eye cancer, who is about to lose his sight, named Isaac. And it's really just a lot of fun hanging out with them and doing these silly things with them. And then you get, you know, to the midpoint, and it's just like, you know, beat after beat and sob after sob until, like, your eyes are puffy and you just can't take it anymore. But I appreciated the mix because one earns the other, and you walk away not feeling sad and, like, deflated, but almost, like, appreciating your life and what you have to look forward to because you came to love these people and you experienced what happened to them, and then you appreciate what you have, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think that's accurate. I was I haven't read the book. You two have?
Yeah.
Okay, so
I have read the book, but I sadly did not get to see the movie before we recorded.
Yeah, but I had not read the book, but I did know it was going to happen because when I was doing casting news, I basically read the Wikipedia entry. But that didn't like negatively impact my watching the movie. I was very taken in by the story and really impressed actually by like the main romance is lovely. And very effective, but I was really surprised by how involved Hazel's parents are in the narrative, because typically in teen movies, parents are like periphery or just clownish obstacles, but in this, like, her relationship with her mother in particular is so important to the story.
It's and too important, it's so sad.
It's that's what
Every
broke me, I'm not gonna lie.
Every time the parents pop up, I'm like, oh no.
Yeah, because, like, there's a lot of sad things in this movie, but there's, like, a conversation she has with her mom, and, like, I feel like there's a part of teenagehood that you don't see represented in a lot of movies where there's, like, a point where a teenager starts to realize that their parents need to take care of them. It's not just that their parents do take care of them, it's that they're, like, that part of your parents' identity is caring for you. And part of your responsibility as a kid to some point is allowing them to, even if you don't necessarily need it. And watching Hazel interact with that moment in her in time is really interesting and sad, and everything's of course more intense because, you know, the whole idea of life is short becomes very real to these teenagers, and there's for them there's no kind of hopeful like, well, maybe we'll be together in heaven. Like, Hazel's like, nope, I don't believe in that. And I don't know. There's a lot here to cry about, but I actually loved that about it. I actually wrote specifically about the joys of crying over this movie, but I think that it could have just been a movie aimed at teen girls, but I think that the team that made it was very thoughtful about being aware there's a bigger audience that could love this movie. And it got to me. I really thought that the dialogue was sharp. I thought the characters were beautifully realized. And, like, I liked this movie. I didn't like this movie as a teen romance. I like this movie, period.
I'm not a big crier, and I don't like to cry in movies because, to me, movies are entertainment, and, like, I go in there to feel happy, so why would I want to be sad and cry? But at the same time, it goes back to what I said before. I didn't walk out of this movie sad. I walked out of it, you know, feeling kind of good about myself and my opportunities and just appreciating what I have. And that's what made it okay. But the movie also has a really good balance in terms of, like, making you feel sad, but putting jokes, even in the sad part, there's a lot of lighthearted moments in there that kind of, you know, keeps it light enough so you're enjoying it while you're crying. But another really smart move they make is how they adapted the book, because there's certain scenes in, I want to kind of talk about spoilers a little to explain my point. But anyway, if they had done a straight adaptation of the book, there's something sad that happens, and the book makes it happen. It makes you kind of live in it and sit in it for a little while longer. And when that bad thing happened in the movie and I already started to cry, I'm like, holy shit, if they make me sit in it now, I'm like, I'm not going to be okay. Please don't. And sure enough, they skip those scenes. And I think it serves the movie very well. The book is a great read. It works fine in the book. But in a movie, when you're seeing these things play out versus just imagining it, mm-hmm. you can't handle it. You got to know when to stop. And I think they do.
They have a really smart sense of there's sadness in the movie, but they never want the movie. And it's a tearjerker. I'll give it that. But it's like, Hazel's perspective on these things is it's almost pointless to get, like, Hazel is, like, already over that she has cancer. It's not that she doesn't care, it's just that she's tired of talking about it, so, like, the movie doesn't, like, dwell in this stuff, and Augustus believes so heartedly in that we should take advantage of this moment and find the joy in the moment that the personalities of the characters infect the film and its tone and bring it along in this way where you do have these sad moments, but the film doesn't want you to fall into this circle of crying, you know? So it's like we move in this really beautiful way into...
He is my favorite. He's like, it sounds so cheesy and cliche, but he's totally going to be the next big thing and I'm going to eat it all up. I love him. He's just adorable. And when you see him on interviews too, that kid, he's like a charmer. He's gonna have quite the people, already does have quite the following, but he's gonna be huge.
Yeah, I heard people early on a few weeks ago there was a screening in New York and there were teen girls lined up around the block, and I heard that they brought in the cast to like say hello, and they were like, it was described as like when the Beatles landed. Like people were just losing their minds. This movie's gonna make tons of money this weekend.
It's gonna make tons of money, and then he's gonna get a really big part in Insurgent and all the other Divergent movies, I'm telling you. People are going to have his face all over, like, their kids are going to have his face all over their walls.
Right, as Shailene Woodley's brother, right?
Yeah, isn't that fun? And then, like, in, then she makes out with Miles Teller in Spectacular Now, only for the two of them to kick the shit out of each other.
I know.
It's, like, a lot of weird,
And then, conversely, you got, what's his face, from Godzilla, Aaron Taylor Johnson and Elizabeth Olsen are married, but then they're going to be brother and sister in the upcoming Avengers
movie. It's just the kind of thing that happens, and I mean, it's acting, but it's still kind of amusing when it happens when two movies are that close together and the characters are playing.
You're just like, are there not a lot of actors in Hollywood? Well, how does this keep
that happening? Happens all the time though? Like, I think like, well, now we're going off topic.
What's
but I
the
think
nature of acting?
Like Emma Thompson and like Hugh Grant or something. Like sometimes they're brother and sister, and sometimes they're like lovers, and it just happens. It's fine.
Just to speak to Ansel Elgort's ability in this movie, that kid can act. I know some people are complaining that his character is kind of, like, too confident and quippy and...
Isn't that kind of the point of the character?
It is the point. That's how he's written. So, like, I was expecting that, and I liked how he did that, and I bought it. But, I don't know, some people are like, it was too much and it made him too one-note. But I think that because they did that, when he gets this one particular chance that I love to emote at the end, it's when he's at the gas station. Holy shit. That scene and looking at him, that he owned that. That was a great moment for him.
Yeah, I think it's less that, because at one point I wrote, like, no teen boy is this, like, self-collected and composed and confident. And then... And this sounds super personal, but then I was like, oh, except for my husband was. He was completely... He wasn't as outgoing as Augustus, but, like, it seemed to me when I was a teenager that everyone was spinning around and trying too hard at something, and he just seemed really relaxed. And he admits that he was not actually nearly as confident as he seemed. But
like
he seemed
Michael, Sarah, and Juno.
Yeah, exactly.
When she's like, oh, you act so cool, and you're not even trying. And he's like, no, I try really hard, actually.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I think that the moment that Perry's alluding to, you see that there is a lot of work put into him seeming composed. That he's not oblivious to the mortality that he has faced and that he is facing when being in a relationship with Hazel. It's just that he chooses to move past that and to project confidence. And I think that the latter half of the movie informs that really beautifully.
I want to ask you guys something. I mean, you guys both talked about what a sad movie this is, obviously. Does it feel manipulative at all to you?
No, it earns it.
I keep hearing that. Like, I think that's crap. I think
because I've heard a few people complain about that. And, I mean, honestly, anything that starts out with, here are teenagers with cancer, obviously it's going to be sad. But
I don't think at all. And I tend to have a bit. That's what part of the reason I don't like crying in movies is because it's so rare. rarely is it earned, and it's almost always manipulative. And like I know I keep harping on this, and I've told you guys this before, but I'm truly scarred by Marley and Me. Like, that movie really upset me, and not to the point where, like, I just cried a little bit and moved on. Like, I can still, to this day, so many years later, think about images in that movie and be like, holy shit. And, like, images out of the context of that story, which obviously mean that they were just thrown in there to make me cry at that moment, and it worked, and it really upset me. It didn't make me, like, appreciate the characters or the moment at all. It just, like, flat out upset me. And so, like, I have a fear of things like that happening now in these types of movies, and they don't do that here at all.
To me, I get annoyed when things like I can hear the score building to like push me toward an emotion. That stuff bothers me. But like, that's, you know, generally I feel like movies, their entire point is to manipulate our emotions. That is what they are setting out to do. I think when it's well done, you don't notice it until it's happening, and when it's not well done, you're like, I get what you're trying to do, but I'm not feeling anything. So
I
like
think, yeah, I think Perry used the right word, earned, because like, you know, any movie is inherently manipulative because they're trying to make you feel emotionally invested in some way or another in things that are not actually happening in front of your eyes. But, you know, some movies do a better job of earning it than others. And then you have movies like Blended, where you're supposed to cheer at the end for these two horrible people getting together and think it's super heartwarming when it's really not at all.
You're really just like, well, that happened.
Right. All right, so we are almost out of time. So let's give some people some advice on whether or not to see this, even though you could probably deduce what we're going to say from our discussion.
I mean, I think it's one of those things where it's like, if you're the kind of person who does enjoy going to the movies and having a good cry, I think this is a great movie for it. And I recommend that. I mean, I say take a good friend, take a box of tissues.
I don't think you even need to be the type of person who seeks out movies that make you feel and cry and like romance. I think this movie is for everybody. If you like to go to the movies and just experience like someone else's something, that's what this does. Whether you like crying, whether you like laughing, anything. And funny thing is, this has one of the most suspenseful scenes in it. Like that part where she goes up the stairs, like my heart was racing. I was at the edge of my seat. And that's after seeing movies like Maleficent and X-Men Days of Future Past. I think that was more suspenseful than anything I saw in those two movies. So go see this for a million reasons, not just because you prefer one movie to another. It's awesome.
I cannot in good conscience recommend this movie because I haven't seen it, but I am planning on watching it probably tonight.
All right, so that is all the time we have for this episode. If you had some fun, keep following us, popcornprosecco.com. You can catch us on Twitter. Our handle is popcornprosecco. And also be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Popcorn Prosecco. And the three of us are all over the web. So, Christy, where can everybody find you?
I write most often for Cinema Blend. I'm also recapping Game of Thrones for the Mary Sue, so be sure to check that out every Monday. And you can find me on Twitter, at Christy Puchko, KristyPuchko.
Angie?
You can find me on Twitter at AJHAN, and I write for SlashFilm.com.
I link all my writing to LittleMissCritical.com, and you can also catch me on Twitter. My handle is PNemiroff. Thank you guys for sticking with us and watching. We hope to see you next week. That's what you wanted.